Westport is one of Kansas City's most popular nightlife destinations, and on the weekends, the bars near the intersection of Pennsylvania and Westport Road, like Harry's and Kelly's and Harpo's, are often packed, wall to wall, for hours on end. Some find refuge just up Broadway at Woody's, another bar with a different vibe.
It's nice to be at a place that's not like Harpo's, where you're body to body with people you don't know.
Katie Walker is a member of the Squad of Sisters, a group she helped form some months ago to combat sexual violence in Kansas City. She's there with another member of the group, who's across the room warming up for the bar's open mic night.
It's a space where people come to listen more than talk. So we think with community outreach and raising a lot of awareness and giving a lot of support to the people that have been affected by sexual assault, that we'll be able to do something, at least make the voice of survivors stronger, at the very least.
I'm Brian Ellison. Today on Central Standard, we'll hear some of those voices of survivors. We'll also hear from those working to prevent instances of assault and rape from happening in Westport and elsewhere in the metro. First, Helen Proctor is here. She's a founding member of the Squad of Sisters. Helen, good morning.
Good morning.
So how would you describe what that group is? What's the Squad of Sisters?
Squad of Sisters is a group of leaders dedicated to combating sexual violence in Kansas City.
Now, how did that get started?
Well, we all met online. There was an online Facebook group of women that were just getting together wanting to talk about sexual violence, and we decided to take it off of the internet and into the community.
And you're a college student, as I understand it?
I am, yeah.
So are the others involved also students, or are they all at sort of different stages in life?
There are a couple students, but we're from all walks of life.
Mm-hmm. And why did you choose to focus on Westport?
Well, rape culture is a really big problem in Westport. That's a place that is definitely, it's one of the places I feel the least safe in Kansas City as far as that goes. It just seemed like the best place to start for that reason.
And you say it's a place to start. To start doing what? What's the long-term hope for what you want to accomplish?
Well, what we want to do is change the culture. The problem with sexual violence is that all of these things that allow it to happen have been completely normalized. Things like date rape, things like street harassment, sexual assault have been completely normalized. So what we want to do is change the culture, and we want to start in Westport, but that's not where we'll finish. We want to combat sexual violence all across Kansas City.
One of the ways that some people have learned about your group is through a pamphlet or a zine that showed up in April called Worried About Westport. Why don't you describe that for people?
Yeah, so we just wanted to provide a platform for people, for survivors of sexual assault, people who've experienced sexual assault in the Westport area, to share their stories and have their voices heard without putting themselves at risk. So we were able to gather stories from people anonymously online, and we put that together just to raise some awareness. We distributed the zine throughout Westport and throughout Kansas City.
And what's the response to it been like?
It's been really great. People have been really supportive. I've heard from readers and from contributors that it's really encouraged people to start talking about this problem and to become more comfortable speaking out about sexual assault. It's been really great.
Now, some of the booklet, the zine, is statistics and facts. Someone in this country is sexually assaulted every 107 seconds. Some of it's art, poetry, and illustrations. And some of it's information about prevention services or events. A lot of it's also stories. How did you get people to submit those stories? You said you did it online?
Right. We provided an anonymous submission form so that people could comfortably and safely share their personal experiences without putting themselves at risk.
Were you surprised by the response to that?
Yeah, I was. We got quite a few, actually. I think we had a few more than we were able to include.
Okay. And I guess I'm curious, you've been putting this together, you're telling the stories of other people. Is this a personal issue for you, Helen?
Yes, it is. I'm a survivor myself.
Can you talk a little bit about that? Was this something that happened in Westport?
No, it was not something that happened in Westport.
And what specifically about what's happening in Westport makes you want to sort of bring these personal experiences to bear here?
Well, it's just so normal there. I mean, date rape or acquaintance rape, the most common kind of rape, is something that I think is completely so normal in an area like Westport that you can openly talk about it. Street harassment is pretty much unavoidable. Yeah.
Would it be different in somewhere like Power and Light? Have you experienced those areas differently in Kansas City?
I don't spend a lot of time in Power and Light. I think it's actually, if I had to guess, I think it's a lot worse there. I'm actually just wary of even going to that area. So we chose Westport because I actually feel like I can be there.
So it's not that you're saying it's the worst place in town. It's that you're saying this is a place you know and there's a problem.
Absolutely.
You've mentioned several things. You've mentioned rape. You've mentioned sexual harassment or street harassment. How important to you is the distinction between those different things?
Well, you know, you can sort of use sexual assault as the blanket term. I guess the distinction is important, but it's really up to the victim or the survivor.
Mm-hmm. Throughout the show today, we're going to hear some other stories from some of the squad of sisters, this group that Helen has been part of starting. But let me bring in Caitlin Corcoran to the conversation. She's the general manager at Sava. That's the champagne bar down at the south end of Pennsylvania Avenue in Westport. Welcome to you, Caitlin.
Hello.
So you've worked in Westport for a while. How familiar do stories like the ones Helen talks about sound to you?
Pretty familiar, but I feel like it's not just a Westport thing, it's a familiar thing as a woman.
Yeah, say more about that. I think is it a familiar thing as a woman in a late night entertainment district or everywhere?
Everywhere. It's a societal problem that, you know, I think that Squad of Sisters is trying to combat from a nightlife standpoint, because that's an area that gets targeted a lot because you're drinking and, you know, predators can prey on people that are drunk a little bit easier. But it's a problem that happens across the gamut. It's not just a nightlife bar problem.
Have you actually observed assaults happening in Westport or know about them?
I know of them. I have not observed them. Sava's a different type of bar. It's not, we don't cram everyone in, and it's not like people are lining up behind the bar to get lots of Jaeger bombs and shots. But we do have the occasional guest who is a little bit too forceful and hitting on people. And so I have, like, witnessed men, you know, force themselves on, like, try to get people to give them their number or go to the next bar with them. And usually we ask them to leave pretty quickly when we now realize that that's happening.
And on what basis are you doing that? Is it of a legal concern, or who are you doing that for?
My guess, I think it's an extension of hospitality. I want the women that and men that come and drink in my bar to feel safe and have a nice experience, and I don't want them to feel uncomfortable. And it's usually because the person has not been with that party all night, and you can just tell the body language and the guests that they don't really want this attention, they don't really want this conversation to be happening, but they're usually too polite to just say, like, buzz off.
Mm-hmm. How often do you feel like you have these kinds of incidents in your bar?
At least once a month I have to kick someone out, I think.
And are you kicking them out because they're disruptive or because you think there's really, like, the risk of sexual assault there?
Both. I mean, I wouldn't want them to follow the group of girls or group of people to the next bar and then something else happened there and they were, like, already telling, like, don't follow us, we don't want to go out with you, we don't want to give you your phone number, like, at my bar. Like, I don't want that to, like, as the night goes on, to, like, progressively get worse.
You must talk to other business leaders in the mm-hmm. Westport area.
Yes.
Is your experience pretty common? Do others have it even worse?
I don't know if others have it. I don't know. I can't really speak to that. I think that Sava's special because our demographic is mostly female, so we have a little bit different just experience there because most of our guests and clients are women. But I do think that, like, people acknowledge that this is an issue to be had in Westport. And, you know, I can't speak for this, but I have not ever seen anyone, like, be drugged at my bar. But, like, I know that date rape drugs are something that, you know, a lot of predators use in the nightlife scene. And that's not uncommon. And I think in general, like, especially on the south end of Westport, it's less patrolled and it is not as, like, well lit. So I know that people have been mugged and people have been attacked in other ways besides just sexual assault.
Mm-hmm. Do you worry about your customers when they walk out that door after a long night?
It depends. I mean, we usually, if a guest is leaving by themselves and they've mentioned that they're walking to their car, someone on staff will, like, follow them to make sure that they're okay, or we'll call Westport security, and if we're too busy and be like, this person doesn't feel comfortable walking to their car, they're parked in the back parking lot, will you escort them? Mm-hmm. And they're usually very responsive about that.
Do you feel safe yourself?
Yeah, but as safe as I feel anywhere.
Which is to say...
I mean, I'm...
Not very safe?
Yeah, I live downtown and I won't walk by myself.
Yeah.
After a certain point of night.
And when you express that, I mean, I guess I'm curious about the response. Do you think other women who work in Westport feel that way? Do you feel like it's a place you've come to out of a series of bad experiences, or is it just extra caution?
I think it's just, I don't think I'm an outlier in that. I don't know why other women have got to that point, but I feel like it's based on experience, based on the news cycle, based on the society that we live in right now. Like, that's just, I'm extra careful because I don't want anything else to happen that's already happened.
Yeah. I want to come back to you, Helen Proctor. You know, you're talking about all kinds of different kinds of businesses and bars, all kinds of different activities people are going to Westport to do. Where do you think the responsibility lies for addressing these problems you're raising?
That's a really good question. I think it lies in the people who commit acts of sexual violence themselves. But it's also a community responsibility to provide education for people about what consent means and what sexual assault looks like, so we can all protect each other in that way. So at a basic level, I think it's the responsibility of the people who commit those crimes not to commit those crimes. But I think everyone should be doing their part to help keep each other safe.
Right. A lot of conversation about prevention often focuses on the bar owners or for that matter, the potential victims.
Right.
You're suggesting that maybe the attention to be focused on the ones who would commit the crimes.
Yeah, I think so.
So how would that happen then? I mean, how does your zine or how do efforts in the community actually turn that focus where you say it rightly belongs?
Well, again, it's a culture change. So these are stories like the stories we have in our zine. They're just things that people don't get to openly talk about very much because there's a lot of victim blaming and victim shaming. So they're just stories that we don't actually hear. They're narratives that are pretty much silent. So by giving voice to those issues, people can actually see and actually hear, if they haven't experienced it firsthand, what that looks like. And then we can address the problem when it becomes more visible.
Caitlin, when you hear Helen talk as someone who would be a potential customer who's mm-hmm. concerned about what's happening in the culture around your bar, how does that make you respond? What do you want to say to the Helens of the world who are worried about Westport?
I think the worry is fair, and I think that it's fair for any nightlife, and I'm glad that they're starting in Westport. And I will say that, like, if you're ever feel unsafe, know that you can come to Sava, and like, we will make sure that like you get taken to your car safely or wait for your taxi.
Yeah, you talk about that. You see there's a role for you as sort of a safe space, even though you are one of the businesses that also is a potential risk.
Yeah, exactly. And I know we have on multiple occasions, people have come into the bar and just waited until their Uber comes because they feel like they were followed, or they just don't feel safe waiting by themselves. And, you know, we don't pressure them to get a drink. We just sit with them and give them a glass of water or just mm-hmm. talk while they like wait for their Uber or wait for their friends to meet up with them, etc.
Yeah, where is the line? I guess I would ask, is it hard to find the line between providing people what they want, providing this service, which is alcohol for the most part, but also sort of accepting this responsibility for the behavior that might happen afterward, whether as a perpetrator or as putting themselves at mm-hmm. risk as victims?
Well, I think in general, like every bartender and bar owner knows what over-serving looks like. And I think that it's not just because of sexual assault, but it's also like, would you want someone to get in their car and go drive after you've fed them X amount of drinks? So I think it's a responsibility just to make sure that your guests are safe, not only from sexual violence, but also from all of the other things that can happen after being maybe over-served or a little bit drunk.
Which you have a legal responsibility to do as well.
Exactly.
Let me ask you, Helen, I know you're going to say goodbye to us here at this break in a moment, but what's next for the squad of sisters? What are your next programs or plans?
Well, actually, this is great news to hear about Sava as a potential safe space that you can go to. One of the things that we want to do is create a sort of map of Westport, and we can hopefully certify in some way or legitimize some safe spaces where people know that they can go and feel safe. We want to talk to business owners. We want to talk to Westport security. We want to just talk to everyone and see if we can create something that helps people navigate that area safely.
And I know you're a senior at UMKC. What's next for you? Is this work that you hope to continue after college?
Absolutely.
How so? What are your plans? That's a rude question to ask a senior, probably. But.
No, it's fine. I think I'll be an activist for the rest of my life. I'm not exactly sure what that looks like right now, but I definitely am not going to stop.
Well, we will have more stories as this show continues. Helen Proctor, thanks for being here and sharing some of yours.
Thank you.
When we come back, KCUR Central Standard continues a conversation about sexual assaults in Westport, including conversation with advocates and law enforcement who are working to prevent these incidents. What, frankly, can be done about it? I'm Brian Ellison. We'll try to figure it out. Don't go away.
We were walking down the street and we heard this guy be like, "I already slapped 30 S's tonight. If I see a girl without a man, I'm gonna slap her ass." I got a little heated, like I didn't say the right things. He started getting angry, but then he just like ran away, basically. We went up to a cop and told him about it, and he was like, "Oh yeah, I saw the whole thing," and just like brushed it off. I don't know, it's just like, people just don't see a problem with it. I think maybe if he would have, like, actually, like, physically, like, attacked us, maybe he would have done something. But otherwise, like, him just talking about sexual assault is, like, not a big deal. People should intervene when they see stuff like that going down, because sometimes it's really obvious and people just don't do anything because it's so, like, normalized. I personally try to do that. Like, there was this girl, like, she was just, like, in this parking lot, like, on her phone, and she, like, clearly looked, like, anxious and... like she was trying to find a ride home, and my friend and I waited with her until her friends came and picked her up, and she was like really thankful. It should be a given. It shouldn't be that hard. It's not like getting in people's business. It's like protecting each other. It doesn't hurt to ask, and even if you kind of like or make someone annoyed or uncomfortable, that's probably like the worst that's going to happen.
That was Anna, one of the members of the Squad of Sisters, a new group seeking to raise awareness about sexual violence and promote safety. We're talking about that, especially as it affects Kansas City's Westport neighborhood, today on KCUR Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. We're now also joined by Jessie Hogan. She's Director of Advocacy Services for MOXA. That's the Metro Organization to Combat Sexual Assault. Jessie, hi.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Glad you're here. So how big an issue is sexual assault in our community?
Yeah, well, you know, nationally, statistics show that 1 out of 6 women and 1 out of 33 men, at least, have experienced an attempted or completed rape. And 1 out of 4 women and 1 out of 6 men have been sexually abused during their lifetime. And we know that this is a problem locally as well. MOXA has seen the demand for services related to sexual assault and abuse increase significantly over the years.
Can you talk about the services that are being sought from MOXA?
Certainly. So MOXA is a nonprofit organization that provides advocacy, education, and therapy services to survivors of sexual assault and abuse and their families, as well as to the community at large. We serve the greater Kansas City area and provide those services free of charge. So individuals may come to MOXA to receive therapy, as I mentioned, for an assault or abuse that occurred in their past, or they may be coming because they're dealing with the recent aftermath of sexual violence, and they need some assistance navigating through the various systems.
Can you compare Kansas City to those national numbers you gave? Do you have any sense of whether we have a more serious or less serious problem here?
You know, I would say that Kansas City is probably similar to many other large metropolitan areas when it comes to sexual violence. What we do have is a very strong community collaboration, though, that is focused on ending sexual violence. And I think that puts us in a much better position than perhaps some other locations.
You heard Helen, our guest in the first segment, say that she doesn't necessarily think Westport is worse than other neighborhoods. Do you have a sense of what kind of area is especially risky or dangerous for sexual assault?
Yeah.
I don't know if Westport specifically needs to be the only one, but are entertainment districts like this particular places of risk?
So the reality is that sexual violence can happen anywhere and does happen anywhere. We know that the majority of victims are assaulted by someone that they know. So as opposed to perhaps the common idea of a stranger most likely being a perpetrator, it's often maybe someone that victim knows or is an acquaintance of or might meet at a bar or other location. What we do know is that, you know, sometimes perpetrators target locations like entertainment districts because they're looking for individuals that they might perceive to be more vulnerable because they may be ingesting alcohol or drunk. And perpetrators often use alcohol as a tool to facilitate sexual assault. You know, as Helen mentioned, the victim-blaming attitudes that go along with victims who have been ingesting alcohol and maybe drunk, that can sometimes create a situation where perpetrators are less likely to be held responsible for their actions.
So it's not so much that you as an observer of that are blaming those victims. You're saying that the reality that will happen encourages the perpetrators to go to those places.
Sure.
Are you when you hear people like Helen, who was with us in the first segment, say, I just don't feel safe in Westport. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, you know, I think that's a common response, especially if someone has experienced violence in their past, to know that there are perpetrators that could potentially target someone anywhere, but certainly those kinds of areas could be a particular risk. And so I think having support services like MOXA can go a long way towards increasing that sense of safety and support.
Help us understand something. You heard Anna's story at the beginning of this segment where a man is walking down the street. He's slapping women, says he's going to slap all the women he sees if they're not with a man. Is that sexual assault?
Yeah, you know, I think that what we use the term sexual assault often as an umbrella term to include various types of unwanted sexual contact. So, you know, if a person perceives that as sexual assault, you know, as Helen was mentioning, oftentimes it's based on that victim's perception. But we often talk about various forms of sexual assault, sexual harassment, sexual abuse, and rape.
Should something be done about a situation like the one Anna described in that story? Should there be a police response? Should there be some other kind of response from those around in the community?
Yeah, I think that when we allow behaviors like that to go by unnoticed or uncommented on, it becomes normalized, as was mentioned earlier. And in fact, it can sometimes encourage perpetrators to feel like their actions will not have any consequences. So taking action, even at the level of street harassment, can sometimes prevent further and more violent actions from taking place.
Let me invite our listeners to the conversation. Have you been the victim of sexual assault in the Westport area or felt threatened there? What would make you feel safer? We'd really like to hear your story as part of this conversation. So call us at 816-235-2888. 88. That's 235-2888. You can also ask questions of our guests. Let me introduce Captain Cindy Cotterman. She's with the Central Patrol Division of the Kansas City Police Department. She is the watch commander for the area that includes the Westport neighborhood. Cindy, welcome to you.
Thank you and welcome.
It's good to have you here. So how long have you been working in the Westport area?
I took over the watch commander in August of 2015, so approximately 11 months.
Fairly recently. I know you've been with the KCPD longer than that.
Correct.
Do you believe Westport is a safe area?
In general, it's as safe as most areas are. As it's been mentioned by several people, sexual assaults, other kinds of crimes occur throughout the city, and Westport is just one of those places that continue to have crimes because of an influx of people there, and criminals will know that there is going to be an influx of people and they will prey on those victims.
Mm-hmm. Well, what crimes typically are you and your officers dealing with in Westport?
We have sexual offenses, robberies, stolen autos, just assaults a lot. Probably that's our most common one is assaults.
And assault, is that a general term that could include sexual assaults, or is that just non-sexual assault?
More likely to be a non-sexual, but yes, sexual assault can be included in that. But most likely that's a bar fight or two people arguing over something.
I know there must be statistics about this, and if you have statistics, that's great. But even just anecdotally, do you have a sense of whether violence levels and crime reports have changed over the years in Westport?
I actually, from talking to other people, a few years ago, a Westport plan was put together, including the business owners down at Westport and the law enforcement. We get together, we make a plan. Each year it's tweaked compared to the last year. And because this plan has been put into place and safeguards have been put in place, the crime has actually gone down in Westport, even though there's probably been more patrons in the last few years that visit Westport area.
And without, without, again, asking you to produce very detailed numbers that you may not have access to right now, is it your sense that the level of danger to a person walking through Westport is different than it used to be as a result of that?
I don't believe the danger level is as high as it used to be because of this plan. We have Westport public safety officers. We have off-duty officers that the businesses hire. And we also have on-duty officers that walk the interior of the perimeter in Westport. And then we also have officers that stay on the outside perimeter in the parking lots. So we put up barricades so that cars can't get in there and run people over. So I believe we do a lot of visual and actual hands-on safety measures mm-hmm. for the Westport area.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the security guards who are there that the businesses provide. I know that the police partner with Westport Public Safety, which is provided by the Westport Regional Business League. How does that partnership work? What's their job and what's your job?
Well, they do not have the arrest capabilities, but other than that, we kind of work hand in hand. We have walkies that we talk back and forth to. They work with us. They walk around. The business owners can contact them or us, and we just work hand in hand together doing the same thing. The only thing that we do differently is we are able to arrest someone.
We should mention that we asked a representative of Westport Public Safety to join us today. Their director, Kim Kimbrough, said he thought the partnership with police worked well, and he declined to join us or to let anyone from Westport Public Safety do so. I want to ask you again, Jesse, when you hear about the role of police as well as security guards in a community like this, do people who are either victims of sexual assault or potentially victims of sexual assault, is law enforcement a place that they tend to turn either before or after these incidents?
Sure. You know, it obviously depends on the individual, but by and large, because sexual violence can be such a personal issue and something that can carry with it the chance for stigma or victim blaming, it can be that sometimes survivors feel reluctant to reach out to law enforcement or really to even talk to anyone about what's happened to them. A lot of times the first person they might disclose to would be a friend or a family member, someone that they're trusting of and comfortable around.
Yeah. And I guess I'm curious if we talked about safe spaces, talked about particular businesses that could be safe spaces. Does a person who is afraid know that in today's day and age, do they turn to police as a safe space?
Sure. And again, it can vary so much based on that individual and their experiences perhaps previously. But I do think that there is more information about what resources exist. That's one of the things that MOXA always provides when we work with survivors, is letting them know about their options. Whether they decide to make a police report or not, we'll support them and provide resources and in whatever area they choose to follow. But certainly being able to allow that individual the choice to make as to whether or not they want to work with the criminal justice system can be really powerful.
Are there limitations to what an agency like MOXA can do, though? I mean, you have obviously a limited number of staff and resources.
Sure. You know, thankfully, because of the community support, private donations, and funding that we receive through other sources, MOXA has been able to expand our staff. We also rely very heavily on a large group of volunteers to be able to provide services 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So, you know, we do face some capacity limitations at times. But we are seeing that this is an issue that's becoming more energized in our community. More people are wanting to get involved. More people are having conversations like this, which I think is moving this issue forward.
Cindy, you heard that report or that story from Anna at the beginning of this segment about the man who was threatening to slap women. And one of the things Anna said is that there were people she believed to be law enforcement officers nearby who saw that happening and didn't intervene. Taking her account as accurate and without you knowing the specifics, was that assault? Is that something where you would have liked to have seen officers intervene?
Anytime that you put your hands on someone unwantedly, that is considered an assault. And so, yes, I would classify that as an assault. The distinction on law enforcement getting involved is, as Jesse has said, that they have to report it to us. Mm-hmm. An outside person can say, did you see that? But as a law enforcement person, I can go over and approach them. And sometimes, as a victim, they don't want to report that to us at the time. They don't feel comfortable. And so we don't want to be offensive to them, put them on the spot. So many times we wait for the victim to come to us to report that, because it is their choice to decide, is that a sexual offense to them or is that acceptable to them? See, my judgment is different than their judgment.
Yeah, and it seems like a very difficult line of when does one intervene and when does one respect their freedom to decide that. I guess maybe the bigger question then is when you hear about incidents, and I guess I ask you this not just in your official capacities, but as people, as women who might go out in Westport yourselves, what does it say about our culture and our society that such a thing can happen and that it would find sort of social acceptance, at least with it by some, that a man can walk up and down the street and say, I'm going to slap all the women I see?
Yeah, you know, it goes back to the conversation we've been having about rape culture as a whole, I think, and that when we allow certain behaviors like this to become normalized, when we allow objectification of women or any group, really, to become acceptable, then that leads to increased instances of violence. And so we can make a difference not just by taking a larger stance against sexual assault and rape, but also by those day-to-day interactions, you know, challenging a rape joke, or when you hear someone make a victim-blaming statement or comment, or when you see that someone appears to be in an uncomfortable situation, knowing that we all have a role to play and that we can all help prevent sexual violence.
How about you, Cindy?
I agree. Many times it's very difficult, because what one woman might pass as acceptable or afraid to stand up for, another woman may not be quite as accepting of that. And so it's very hard to find that fine line, because if it's been acceptable here, and then this particular male that has done these assaults or offenses does it over here, and this woman doesn't find it acceptable, where is that line? And it makes it harder for those that, you know, to pass it off as this is okay and acceptable in the community.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation about what is a complicated situation. Captain Cindy Cotterman there of the Kansas City Police Department, Jesse Hogan of MOXA, they'll both continue to be with us when Central Standard continues, and we'll hear more experiences of those who work and relax in Westport and how leaders in the community are trying to change the culture. We also want to hear from you. 816-235-2888 is the number to call. I'm Brian Ellison. We'll be back in a minute.
I was celebrating St. Patrick's Day. It's actually the first time I ever did the Westport thing. A person I had never met before started talking with me and the two friends that I had came out with. We ended up staying the day with this person. He would just follow us everywhere that we had went. He seemed very friendly. We had several friends in common. I wasn't interested in him in any way, like to hook up with. The two friends that I had gone out with, they had been drinking. I had been drinking. We were going to drive. For some reason, we didn't even think about getting an Uber, and he offered to drive us because he was sober. So I was like, oh, he certainly can't be a bad guy. Like, he's going to drive me home. I'm going to be safe. He's going to sleep on my couch. It's going to be just fine. I went home. I went to bed, and I woke up to him raping me. Mostly it was the panic, the pain, like, of a person who is a lot bigger than you. And it was in my house. Like, it was very violating because I live alone and there was nobody there that could hear or see or do anything at that time. I don't know exactly what I said, like, kind of in my head as a memory now. I'm like, I felt like Wonder Woman. Could have called the police, but I really just wanted to get rid of him. So I did have to take him home. Luckily, I had had some sleep, so I could drive. He sang songs about how he would kill me on the whole drive home, and I had to just stay on the road and, like, really focus on this person, not, like, pulling my car off of a bridge. Dropped him off in the middle of Westport, like, got rid of him. But it was just a whole day of really fun. Yay, I made a new friend, like, turned into, like, something so disastrous. It's definitely not the neighborhood's fault, there's a lot of bartenders there once you start to meet them that are really good at looking out for stuff like that and are kicking people out. But just the reputation of a neighborhood and the expectations of a neighborhood. Like, when you say we're going out to Westport, everyone kind of gets the same idea. Like, here it comes. Like, it's going to be a weird night. It's difficult. It's just this place that you're so used to growing up in. Your 20s are your formative years. And I spent a lot of them in Westport and made a lot of my friends there. And I think that's over. Like, that period of time is over.
That was Jess. She grew up in Kansas City, went to UMKC, and as you heard, she says she was raped after meeting someone out in Westport. Today on KCUR Central Standard, we're examining violence in the Popular Entertainment District, trying to assess how serious the situation is and what can be done about it. I'm Brian Ellison. I'm back with Caitlin Corcoran of SAVA, Jesse Hogan of MOXA, and Captain Cindy Cotterman of the Kansas City Police Department. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do that at 816-235-2888. Jesse, in your work with MOXA, I wonder if you have sort of identified places that particularly foster a culture of sexual harassment and violence versus places that foster healthier, safer relationships.
Yeah. Well, institutions have a really valuable role to play depending on the makeup of that institution, whether that be a college or university or a fraternity or a bar or entertainment district area. It can either be a place that fosters a perhaps accepting environment of sexual violence and abuse and permits violence to go unchecked, or it can be a place which challenges those ideas and really installs a focus on creating that safe space, as was mentioned earlier.
And so maybe we can all sort of try to answer that question of what we can do. How can those safe spaces and those healthier understandings be fostered? Caitlin, you run a business, and you heard even in those comments from Jess that there are a lot of bartenders, a lot of businesses that seem to do a good job of trying to ensure safety. You mentioned asking people to leave if they're becoming inebriated. Are there other things that you feel like you can do as a business, as a general manager?
Let's see. That's a tough one.
Either for your customers or even for your staff to create a safer environment.
I think for the staff, a big thing that we've instilled is calling Westport Security to escort us to our cars, because as we've learned recently, like, even the buddy system sometimes doesn't work late at night on a weekend. So that's been a hard one, I know, for my staff to really, like, embrace, because they're like, but our car's right there. Like, it's so easy just to, like, go to it. And I'm like, yeah, but it only takes a minute, like 30 seconds for someone to come and attack you.
So you get pretty insistent with them.
Oh, yeah. And especially when they're taking out the trash and, like, recycling and stuff, just making sure that, like, you know, instead of a buddy system, I actually, like, send out three people now, because it's just, like, a little bit more strength in numbers. But then as far as guests, I think something that Jess said, which does resound true, it's like, if you hear, like, a rape joke, like, don't just, like, pass it off and laugh at it. Like, kind of, like, confront that and be like, why do you think that's funny? Like, do you not know that happens to, like, so many women, so many men? Mm-hmm. Kind of, like, just don't let some of the things that, you know, the whole boys will be boys mentality really pass, because we're better than that now. And we realize that that creates this culture which is accepting for predators to prey on women or men.
Yeah, a lot of it is these questions of how to change the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Cindy Cotterman, the police, of course, have these are not new issues for the police department, but are there things that they can be doing or are doing to raise their own awareness of these issues?
I believe so. As we were talking earlier, Jesse with Moxa, their group is coming out to do roll call trainings for our officers. And that's just to give them a more awareness of what resources there are. Again, I think education for the community to say that it's okay to come to us to report it, because I'm sure there's several offenses that have never been reported because they don't feel they want to go through the system. I think some of the legal system probably should, as prosecutors and the trials and all that, if there were, I don't know if Moxa is working with those types of areas too, but that seems to be part of the hesitation of women coming in complaining of or making a report on these kind of offenses. Something else that we do in Westport is if we see a female kind of isolated, or she's maybe intoxicated to the point where maybe not making good judgment at that point, we do try to ask her if we can make escorts to her or get her to a safe place and make sure she gets with a friend or somewhere that she isn't isolated and a potential victim.
And how often do you make those connections for people? I mean, is this something that happens every night?
Absolutely. I'd say on the average, we probably do at least 4 to 6 escorts every night that we're down there.
Well, let's take a couple calls from listeners. 816-235-2888 is the number. Zoe is calling us from Lawrence. Zoe, thanks for calling Central Standard.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. I just want to hear a little bit about the double standard that our culture has about same-sex sexual abuse that oftentimes it's overlooked just because it's not something that's at the forefront of her mind. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
I appreciate your calling, Zoe. I think Zoe raises a good point. Even our conversation today, we've focused mainly on women as victims of men, but that's not always how it is, right, Jesse?
Absolutely. You know, sexual violence happens in all communities, including the LGBTQ community. And there needs to be a focus and attention to make sure that survivors know that they can come forward, they can still receive services, and this is an issue that can affect anyone. We're lucky in the Kansas City area to have an organization called the Kansas City Anti-Violence Project that focuses specifically on providing services for survivors of sexual and domestic violence and hate crimes in the LGBTQ community. Certainly Moxa also provides those services, but we have a great collaboration.
Very good. 816-235-2888 if you want to join the conversation. Let's talk to Ritu in Westport. Thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for having me. I was listening and immediately knew I had to call in. I own a martial arts school in Westport, AKK Karate USA, and we offer women's self-defense classes and martial arts classes, and specifically I really try and work with women who come in for these self-defense classes where they get to strike and hit and work out scenarios of being in dangerous situations. And it's so refreshing to hear this conversation happening, because I find that the biggest obstacle I come up against is people kind of saying, oh yeah, self-defense, women's self-defense, it's important. But then nobody doing anything about it, helping spread the word or the information, or the idea of sexual assault being so normalized and not a big deal that even women feel hesitant to stand up and do something like that for themselves. Yeah. And so it's great to hear this. And I just kind of, I wanted to connect with you all because this is something I'm very passionate about. And about every month I hear a story about someone in Westport, a female in Westport being assaulted or mugged. And it breaks my heart because I'm right there and I am mm-hmm. offering this service and wanting to help women empower themselves and really use their voice and hold their space. And I guess, as far as speaking to your guest, do you have any advice or suggestions about how to get the word out there, or maybe a way that we could connect to help women feel safer?
Sure.
In Westport and in Kansas City.
I appreciate you raising that issue. We haven't talked about self-defense as one of the potential forms of empowerment for potential victims of sexual assault. Is that something that you recommend to folks, Jesse, at MOXA?
You know, we are very supportive of individuals if they want to engage in self-defense or other types of activities to help make themselves feel safer. It's truly oftentimes an individual decision what is going to make that individual feel like they have more control and to increase that sense of safety. You know, one thing I also just like to reiterate is that regardless of whether or not someone has taken self-defense or not, it's never that individual's responsibility to be able to prevent sexual violence from happening against them. And it's important for us not to always focus on tactics that require victims to prevent themselves from becoming victims, as opposed to, as we've talked about, some of the other community level actions that can be taken as well.
Are there other community level actions or efforts to change the culture that we haven't talked about yet that you think listeners need to be aware of, Jesse?
Yeah, you know, I think one great comparison that can be made with the movement against sexual violence is looking at the movement against drunk driving. So, for instance, if the movement against drunk driving had focused on the behavior of victims or potential victims and trying to teach people how to
avoid
being a victim of a drunk mm-hmm. driver, it wouldn't have been very as successful as it could have been. Instead, it really took people coming together and recognizing this as a community problem. So it took people recognizing that we all have a role in preventing it, including challenging the cultural acceptance of drunk driving, engaging bystanders to become more involved. I think we've all heard the term, friends don't let friends drive drunk. And then also improving the system's response to better hold perpetrators accountable. So I think our approach to ending sexual violence can be really similar in engaging all three of those elements.
Let's take one more call from Philip in Kansas City, Missouri. Philip, we don't have a whole lot of time, but thanks for calling.
Hi. So I've been a general manager of multiple nightclubs and an owner of a couple nightclubs in Kansas City and also in New York and Orlando, Florida. I just wanted to add something to MOXA. They said that you have to start to, general managers and staff have to identify the intoxicated girls that are starting to make bad decisions kind of in and out of the nightclub. But something to be aware of that as a part of staff training, because you can do a lot of staff training to prevent this from happening, but you also have to start identifying the men or women that are starting to pay more attention to the girls that are heavily intoxicated or isolated. Because you will notice a couple of them. And you won't notice them directly, but with good training, you will notice the people that will follow a girl that is more intoxicated out the door. You know, and it was originally by herself, and now there's the company of another man that came from nowhere.
Hey, Philip, I appreciate your calling, and I really do appreciate that. It's a good word to end on, as it speaks to the awareness that everyone needs to have of what's going on around them. Thanks so much for that call, and thanks to our guests, Caitlin Corcoran, she's the general manager at Savah, Cindy Cotterman, who's a captain with the Kansas City Police Department and works in the Westport area, and Jesse Hogan from MOXA, director of advocacy services. Thanks to all of you for being here.
Thank you very much.
Really appreciate it. Thanks also to Helen Proctor, who was with us earlier, and Anna and Jess from the Squad of Sisters, whose voices we heard. You can hear all of our recent shows, including today's, at our website. We'll post this one later this afternoon. That's at kcur.org/centralstandard. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at KCURCST, and I'm at PTS Brian. Hope you'll join us tomorrow. It's a Friday food show. We'll talk about farm-to-market dining in Kansas City, plus what's new and noteworthy on the restaurant scene. KCUR Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Our team includes Suzanne Hogan, Jen Chen, and Andrea Tudhope. Our intern is Anna Sterla. Gina Kaufman's on leave. I'm Brian Ellison. Have a great day, everyone.